Leave it up to me to fix the NBA. I'm gonna fix the NBA, y'all. I'm going straight to the top. Just put the sack on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top. Yo, 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 what's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of the Sports of the Real Shit Podcast. Appreciate you guys joining me once again. Mike Philbin here for those who don't know me. For those who are new, welcome in. For my followers, my listeners, my supporters, welcome back. Appreciate you guys. If you're new here, don't forget to subscribe and like and share and all that good stuff. Comment. Let me know your thoughts. Let me know what's up. And follow on social media, you guys. For those who, you know, listen to the podcast and watch, follow on social media. That's where I post the clips, right? If you're not able to watch all, however long I talk for, you know, the content is there for the most part on TikTok and Instagram, Twitter, you know. So you'll get the Cliff's Notes version. You may lose some context, which is the good and bad of social media, right? You get the content, but you can sometimes lose the context, which sometimes is done intentionally, right? By some people, not me, not your boy. I'm honest about what I do. But seriously, though, as always, I appreciate you guys, you know, listening and watching and all that. The support is appreciated. All right, let's jump in, y'all. So I'm skipping NFL this week, all right? Because the NBA is back in a couple days and I needed to do my NBA preview session. All right. Jam packed episode. I think a lot to talk about, a lot to catch up on from the summer. Conversations came up that I wanted to jump in on after the NBA season was over and I couldn't because I was on vacation and all that. And then NBA and then NFL came around and I didn't get to touch on them. So, some might say you're kind of late on it. I don't care. Y'all going to hear my takes. Y'all going to get these takes. I'm going to get these takes off. But yeah, NBA season's back. Long season ahead, 82 games. And the NBA is trying to play with it, right? Now the NBA is jumping in, talking about making rules. You know, you got to play X number of games, 65 games to be eligible for these awards. And, you know, they're going to start fining teams for sitting out multiple players, making new rules. And they're basically doing all this to draw more interest in the NBA regular season. That's really what it is. The NBA regular season has pretty much become a joke for the most part because people are resting players all over the place. Players are just coasting through it, not really caring. And fan interest just isn't there during the regular season. And there's a number of factors for that. And the NBA will tell you, well, you know, based on while the viewer ratings may be down or whatever, the fan interactions on social media is up. Yeah, but, I mean, that doesn't tell the story. The truth is, right, if we're being honest, that as far as ratings go and interest on television watching the live event, NFL is king, and there's reasons for that, right? NFL, you know, it's once a week, it's appointment viewing. But there's other things that, you know, the NFL does or that the NFL has that the NBA is now lacking that the NBA can implement, and I'm going to touch on that in a second. But the NBA is trying to do all these things, you know, to make the regular season more improved. One of them is this mid-season tournament they're calling it for they're calling it the NBA Cup. And this thing's becoming more and more like European soccer. And I'm going to be honest, I'm not a fan of it. I tried to read the joint. I tried to read the rules and how it's going to work with the mid-season tournament. And I really couldn't follow along how it's all going to work. I know there's going to be games on, I think, Tuesdays and Fridays, so whatever it is, right? There's a schedule. There's play-in games. There's group games. There's group games. There is knockout round. It's a whole lot of nothing. Like, it's just mess on mess, trash on trash, lipstick on a pig. I don't know, man. They say when you're changing things, right? People are gonna, you know, be opposed to the change no matter what you do, right? Even if it's a good thing, people are gonna be opposed to the change. And maybe that's what it is in this case. But I'm just gonna be straight up honest. I'm not feeling it. So maybe when I see it and it happens, I might jump on board. For now, I ain't feeling it. And the funny part is they call it midseason tournament, but the joint happens like 2 weeks into the season. It runs from like beginning of November to, you know, I think the championship was like first, second week of December. That's like beginning of the season. And then what happens to the rest of the regular season? I don't know, man. It's just a lot going on there. Trying to read it all is just, I was getting lost. I ain't gonna lie. I felt kind of dumb because I couldn't understand it. So the NBA is going to have, I know they had some stuff on TV trying to explain it. Clearly, I didn't watch it. I'm just going to have to see it to see how it works. I'm more of a visual learner anyway. So I'm going to have to see it to see how it works. But, yeah, so the NBA is trying to bring interest into the regular season, and this midseason tournament is one way of them trying to do it. And I'm not feeling it, like I said. And really, all of this is because it's the NBA's fault. All of this is the NBA's fault. Where the regular season stands now is the NBA's fault. The talent is as good as it's ever been. Like, they had a chance to really, really make this thing right. And they fumbled it really bad. And they fumbled it, as I've talked about in numerous episodes before during last regular season, the NBA itself fumbled it because in an attempt to grow the game, they made the game has become too soft. They made the game soft. It's become analytics driven, right? To the point where the regular season damn near doesn't matter anymore. So analytics, you know, organizations are telling their guys, you know, rest all the time, you know, like that stuff is analytics based now. I used to think it was the players, you know, saying, well, you know, I don't want to play. I'm a little nicked up, right? I still think some of that is true. But the more I hear about it, it's like Steph was talking about it. Steph Curry was saying, these organizations are like, yo, you know, our data is telling us, you know, every few days you got to rest. It's like, so now the NBA is talking about the data is saying that's not true. The data is coming out to say, no, this resting and all that stuff has no impact on injuries. So we'll see if that does anything to teams, you know, forcing guys to rest and all that. It's just a mess. So the NBA, instead of being about the games during the regular season, the NBA is now about storylines and drama. It's just a mess. So those of us who are hardcore basketball fans, we're stuck because we love the game. We want to watch the game. But the best players don't play all the time. Teams are tanking. It's just too much going on. And I blame the NBA because they're trying to bring in all these new viewers internationally, you know, even domestically. And they've made it a show to the point where the regular season, for the most part, is not viewable by those who love basketball. We can't really watch most games. We want to. We love the game. But we really can't because it's just a tough watch because it's a open run, it seems like. Three-pointers all over the place. Dudes come down and jack up threes. There's no defense. The NBA has essentially eliminated defense, right? Then you got people resting all the time, taking days off, players half-assing it. So the NBA is in a tough spot. So being the guy that I am, right, I don't like to complain much, right? When I see something wrong, I can't, you know, I'm not going to front in that sense. Like people who know me will tell you, my wife will tell you, like, I can't take people complaining for a long time. Like, okay, let's fix it. I'm a fixer. So being the guy that I am in my personality, I can't sit there and just, you know, knock the NBA and play the blame game all the time. I want to fix it. So, leave it up to me to fix the NBA. I'm going to fix the NBA, y'all. Here are my recommendations for fixing the NBA regular season to make it more interesting. All right? Five quick thoughts for you guys. Number one, NBA has to get back to allowing defense, okay? Like, this stuff where it's like LA Fitness run where dude is just walking into threes and you can't touch him on the perimeter. Everybody's scoring 30 points, even though, you know, good and well, like, you're good, but you ain't that good. Not everybody in the league should be averaging 25 points. It ain't that many cats who should in the NBA should be averaging 25 points. Like, soon as Luka came a couple years ago and said it's easier to score in the NBA than it is in Europe, the NBA should have been like, hold up, bro. Hold up. Like, that ain't what we're trying to do here. Yeah, we're trying to get new viewers, but we're not trying to make it so that anybody can come here and dominate. Like, soon as Luka said that, Adam Silver should have been like, hold up, time out, change the rules back. Because that's embarrassing. That's embarrassing for somebody to say, hey, man, it's easier to play in the NBA than it is overseas. How do we accept that? How does Adam Silver accept that? Like, yeah, you want to grow the fan base. You want to make more money. But how do you accept somebody saying, hey, it's easier over here than the best, supposed to be the best league in the world. It's easier over here than elsewhere. How do you accept that? So they got to allow more defense, more perimeter defense. Let the dudes play. And the truth is, fans like that. And the players like that. And that, I think, will draw more eyeballs. And that's one of the advantages, I think, when I talk about the NFL, you know, drawing more viewers in the NBA. I think that's one of the advantages that the NFL has over the NBA, in that the NFL still has confrontation, right? I don't want to say this and come off wrong, but the NFL, you know, like, dudes, men, you know, testosterone, we like confrontation in our sports. We watch sports for confrontation. That's why we watch the playoffs, because dudes finally have a chance to get up in each other's grill, and you could tell they don't like each other in the playoffs. They grow to not like each other in the playoffs. So the energy is amped up, like, dudes are ready to go. And that's something that the NFL has over the NBA, in that the NFL allows the fans and the players, especially the men, and I don't know if the women feel this way, especially the men, to kind of, you know, it brings out the testosterone, man. Like, you know, hey, man, us against them. Like, we're ready to fight type of joints. The confrontation is real, and football is palpable. You can feel it. It's not that football is a superior sport. It's football keeps the viewer more engaged, because the viewer is watching what seemingly is a whole bunch of guys pitted up against each other who don't like each other. And the NBA has taken that out of the regular season. So the NBA right now, you're just watching guys, you know, coming down and shooting threes. You know, they're dapping up before, during, and after the game. It's seemingly just like a regular run at the LA Fitness at the Y. But in the NFL, it's like, you know, dudes are still hitting each other. As soft as we want to say the NFL is now compared to years ago, there's still some level of contact. So it's not that football is a superior sport than basketball. It's that the viewer is, as men, especially in America, the American male is attracted to that physicality, that confrontation. It brings about, you know, that, ooh, I don't like you. Ooh, I'm ready to, you know, take your head off type of thing. I promise you, if the NFL went to flag football and there was no contact, people wouldn't be watching flag football. And recently on this podcast, I've advocated for the NFL becoming softer to protect people's brains and stuff. But what I know for a fact is that if NFL went to flag football, we wouldn't be watching. So it's not football that's a superior sport to watch. It's the physicality. Yeah, people could say it's a once-a-week appointment, this and that. That's part of it, too. But I'm telling you, man, fans want that confrontation. So let the dudes play. Go to FIBA rules. I'm okay with the FIBA rules. I'm okay, and I think most basketball purists are okay with lower-scoring games. Forget all this, you know, fake stuff and everybody getting 40 points. Like, dude, nobody... People who love basketball in a sport can tell when dudes are like great at basketball and when their stats are inflated. Like, the kids love the inflated stats now. But guys who know basketball know what time it is. Like, you can't touch these dudes. So let the defense play. Allow defenders to play. Allow guys to show that, hey, man, I know I can score 30. This guy's scoring 30, but I know he can't score 30. He wouldn't be able to score 30 if we were allowed to D him up. Allow the dudes to play. To throw a couple elbows, man, to get physical. Because everybody gets to go off now. Everybody gets to look great. And there's no way to differentiate between the truly great guys and the guys who are just, you know, putting up numbers because the rules allow them to. So the NBA has underestimated the emotional aspect of the sport. This is what the NFL gets right. As much as they're trying to take out dirty hits and headshots and all that stuff, which is great, but the NFL understands that sports are emotional in the United States. Confrontation, it's like it's an emotion. It makes you upset. Like, your team's getting beat or your team is beating the other person and the receiver gets up and he growls at the guy he just beat. The linebacker makes a hard hit and he stands over the guy. That's emotions. In America, there's a lot of emotion tied to sports. So for basketball, for the NBA, I would say allow the emotion to come back, and to the way the emotion gets back, it to allow these dudes to play defense. Because then they could bump a little bit, you know, and then when you bump somebody, of course, I mean, on offense, somebody bumps you don't like that. So you're bumping back, and it gets under your skin. Next thing you know, dudes are nose-to-nose, face-to-face like they used to be. Like the bad boys. They don't got to fight. They don't have to go to that level. But allow some physicality to come back, man. That testosterone is needed. That contact, that dislike for each other is needed, man. That contact breeds confrontation. It really does, I'm telling you. If you ever play basketball, whether it's, you know, LA Fitness, pickup run, wherever, right? Somebody's rubbing up on you a little too much. Hey, man, get off me, bro. Next thing you know, the guy's playing defense on you. He's too close. You're pushing him off to go get your shot. And then you give him a little extra shoulder on the drive. And next thing you know, everybody's mad, and the fans in the arena are going crazy, and you at home are going crazy like, yo, get his ass. I'm telling you, man, it's just too friendly right now. The NBA missed that mark. I'm telling you, listen to your boy. Listen to your boy. That physicality is needed, especially amongst American males. I can only speak American males, right? Like, that's why we watch football, bro, NBA. That's why we watch the NFL so much and college football. It's not that they're better sports. It's that confrontation, that there's still some level of confrontation. And as long as the NBA remains soft, the NFL will remain king in TV ratings. Take out flopping. Right? That's all part of it. That's all part of the softness. Take out the flopping. Make the fines more steep. Like, the NBA has threatened to make fines for flopping and stuff, but they haven't really gone through with it full board. Like, yo, get rid of the dudes who are flopping, man. If you want to flop, tech them up, fine them. And we can see it. And make the fines steep. Like, if you flopping for a call and you get it, of course the refs in real time may not know all the time. But if we catch you on replay flopping, yo, that's big money, man. You should lose big money for flopping. Because that kills the game. Nobody want to watch that. Not a damn person wants to sit there and watch dudes playing soccer and basketball. Soccer has its place. Basketball is a different sport, man. Cut it out. Take out the flopping. So that's my first recommendation, all right? Allow the game to get more physical. Dudes to beat up on each other a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Enough of the niceness. Number two, and the NBA did this a little bit, but they need to do more. I say it should be 75 or more games to get any award. The NBA says 65. I say 75 games at least. If you get hurt, you miss 20 games, sorry, man. Can't help you there. 75 games for awards and NBA, you know, first team, second team votes and all that, right? That way, dudes have to play. They're incentivized because we already know their salaries are tied, right? In some instances, right? The salaries are tied to making all-NBA teams and so on. But if your salaries are tied to these awards, these you know, these awards that you get and these NBA first teams and all that, then you're incentivized to play the games. So if, and if the awards are tied to 75 games or more, then dudes are going to play. They have to play. They can't load manage. Get that bullshit out of here, man. Again, the NBA has already come out and said in the last couple of weeks that load management don't really make no difference. This resting stuff don't make no difference. The data doesn't support it. So we'll see how it works. Because players are blaming organizations. Some organizations are playing or saying players, blah, blah, blah. Right? Everybody's make, pointing the finger and making excuses. So 75-plus games for all awards. Kind of like, you know, the Derrick Rose rule, you know, I don't know if it's still around, but the Derrick Rose rule was if you made, you know, all NBA first team first couple of years and, you know, all-star and won the MVP, then, you know, your salary, you know, by the time you were up on your deal, your rookie deal, for your second deal, your salary would jump, would escalate. Of course not. Dudes are getting paid way more, so it probably doesn't even matter. But you, it's worth a shot. 75 games or more for awards, and those awards are tied to salary bumps. Number three, NBA has to improve refereeing, man. We've talked about it long enough, making NBA referees full-time, you know, this and that. NBA has to improve refereeing. Calls got to get consistent. And especially the biggest one, I think, right? I talked about flopping, definitely. Refs got to be better at identifying floppers. Secondly, man, traveling. We got to get consensus on what to travel and to call it when it does happen. I know sometimes dudes do it so fast that you can't really tell. But when James Harden takes seven steps on a step back, we got to call that. When Bron takes a bunch of steps to his layups, we got to call that. Just this couple nights ago in the preseason game, this dude took like one dribble and like 10 to 11 steps, it seemed like, for a layup. And is the NBA not calling that? Giannis has to get called on his travels. The NBA has to call traveling. So the NBA refereeing has to improve across the board, but especially for traveling. And I'm going to say this, man. I'm coaching these kids now. You know, I already talked about this on the podcast previously. I'm coaching these kids, teaching them the fundamentals. I have no idea what to teach them about traveling. What do I tell them? Because traveling's not called. So how do you D up a guy when you're expecting this guy to take, you know, two steps and a shot, but he gets to take a third and a fourth? And sometimes a fifth and a sixth. How do you stop that? Dudes can literally head fake into infinity. They can hezzy into infinity and get a shot off. I'm going off track here. I've gone off track, but that was my complaint. No, but seriously, though, we got to improve the refereeing, man. Make it more consistent. I can't be a better referee at home. And on obvious calls, I'm not talking about stuff that, you know, bang, bang. I'm talking about obvious stuff, out of bounds stuff. Like, what the hell are you looking at? So refereeing got to get more consistent. Number four, I think this is controversial. But another way to fix the NBA regular season, I think, is this is controversial, man. Top four teams, regular season record, only the top four seeds in the first round get home games in the playoffs. Yeah, y'all heard that right. Only the top four seeds in the playoffs will get the first, only the top four seeds in the regular season, right, top four records from each conference will get home games, meaning that two at home, two away joint, right? And then we're rotating back and forth. Nah. That is an incentive for both players and owners, because owners don't want to lose out on that additional revenue during the playoffs, that first round of the playoffs. And players don't want to play four straight games away to start a playoff series. So make it competitive. All right? I know it's controversial, but I'm telling you right now, that's one way to improve the regular season. Top four seeds in each conference are the only ones who get home games, meaning that if you finish the fifth seed and you're going to have to play the fourth seed four straight games at their place or however long it is, best out of seven at their place. If you want to get home court advantage, go play during the regular season. Win the games. Make it matter. You'll get some complaints, of course. But hey, it is what it is. I'm telling you, that'll get players to play, because they players know that, man. Playing all the games at somebody else's crib, that's an early exit. That's a big disadvantage for players. And owners want that money. So that's my recommendation. That's the one I'm like, ooh. I was like, man, how do we make these guys compete? That's one I think will make the guys compete. Top four seeds only get home all the home games. Y'all learn and start playing. But I don't see it happening. Owners ain't going to buy that one. Owners want that money no matter what. That's the thing about this thing. You're trying to get players to play, but really the owners just care about their money, like the damn luxury tax. You got owners paying to improve their team and willing to go into the luxury tax, while other owners are just going to chill at the crib because of revenue sharing. Yeah, when y'all have a chance, look into how the luxury tax works and how the dudes who don't spend money get to make money off of the dudes who do spend money to improve their team. It's BS. So there's no incentive. And right now there is no incentive for them to go with my recommendation either. But I think it'll be great. It'll force dudes to play and force teams to put everything they have into, you know, winning regular season games. But since that's probably not going to fly, right, the NBA doesn't really care about my opinion like that. What really needs to happen, and I've said it before, I'm going to say it again, the players are just going to have to take the onus on themselves. That's my fifth recommendation, is that the players actually step up and do what's right by the fans. Kobe didn't cheat the fans. Bron didn't cheat the fans. Jordan didn't cheat the fans. So the players are going to have to take it upon themselves to not cheat the fans and play every game. Anthony Edwards has that mindset. Jason Tatum has that mindset. They've talked about it, right? These dudes want to play. KD is one of these guys who want to play all the time. So more players need the mindset, I don't care what the organization says, I'm going to play and I'm going to play hard. I'm going to ball out. I'm going to put on a show, because I don't know these people who pay their hard-earned money to come see me, I don't know if this is going to be their last time getting a chance to see me live this year or ever. In this economy, going to a basketball game, who knows how many games the average family can afford to go to? And I think these dudes take it for granted. So I'm going to need some of these guys, hey, man, mama mentality, you know, Kobe, this and that. You talk about it all the time. Well, do right by Kobe, man. Live up to that mama mentality. All right? Create your own mentality and your own standard where you're like, hey, man, I'm going to go all out for these fans. I'm going to put on a show each time I step on a court. Unless I'm truly hurt, I'm going to step out there and I'm going to give it my all. And those are the dudes that go down as legends and that the people appreciate. Yeah, the Jason Tatum mentality. Start a new trend, dude. So I think that's probably what's the most likely to happen is for dudes to actually say, okay, I'm going to start playing. All it needs is a couple to set the trend, and it's for the next generation to follow along. But, man, I so wish they would do the I so wish the NBA would do the top four seeds from each conference would get the home games. That'll be amazing. You want to talk about fighting for regular season spots? It would get the feel like college and the NFL, right? College, each game counts. Because you lose one, you're gone. Now, the NBA can't do that, but that's the attraction of college football, right? Each game matters. You don't want to lose. So you're hyped for each game. But the NFL also, right, the games do matter because of seeding. You really don't want to play in Buffalo in January if you can stop it, right? If you can prevent it. You don't want to go to Buffalo. You don't want to go to KC to play in January. So teams are fighting for those playoff spots. You don't want to go play four games in Golden State. Who would do that? Play a seven-game series all in Golden State, you don't get to go home with that crowd? Can you imagine? Oh, yeah. That would be crazy. So anyway, those are my thoughts on that. I know I went kind of long on that, but the NBA regular season, man, again, I love basketball. I know you guys do too. But the NBA can take steps to improve the regular season. All right. Couple of things I want to talk about. Let's make some predictions. Y'all ready for some predictions? I'm not going to go through every team and say what every team is going to do and all that, right? I'm not going to predict all the playoff teams. So here's what I'm going to do. Here's who I think are the contenders this year, okay? And it's a long season, so of course I'm going to come back and rehash this thing and you know, go through it again. But as of now, I'm just going to pick contenders, all right? Contenders and a couple of guys who people are saying are contenders, but I think are pretenders. So here are, I think, the true contenders. In the East, there's really two true contenders, man. There's the Celtics and the Bucks. The Celtics, at first, I wasn't really big on that KP trade, that Porzingis trade. But, man, I'm excited for them about that Drew trade. I think Drew is going to help them a lot defensively and offensively. He's going to help them get stabilized. I think he helps them a lot. Tatum and Brown still got to take the next step, I think. I've been saying this, and I'm going to continue to say it. These guys have the potential to be both Hall of Famers, but they got to want it. They got to want it. So they got to take the next step. This is really conference finals a bust for them. I at first, I was going to say this really would be finals a bust for the Celtics, but because of the bus getting Damian Lillard, it's not a guarantee to get to the finals, all right? That's just the truth. But they should get to the conference finals. If the Celtics don't get to the conference finals, blow it up. I'm done with them. Forget this dynamic duo joint. Scratch it. Throw it all out. All right? Break the team up totally. And I know Jason or Jaylen Brown just got paid, but you know what I mean. But because of the Bucks and the Damian Lillard trade, which was excellent, then I expect the Bucks to be in the conference finals as well. Listen, Bucks, y'all go out in the first round to some scrub team. I shouldn't say scrub team. To a team that's not as good as Miami, like Miami was last year, then yeah. I don't know what to say, Giannis, Dame. Maybe what the fans are saying about Dame is right. Maybe he's not ready for the big time. But I don't think that's the case. So I expect the Bucks to be in the conference finals. Yo, this Giannis and Damian Lillard pick and roll game, 1-2 game, is going to be ridiculous. How do you stop that? Dame coming up with the ball on the pick? Giannis setting the pick? What do you do? And then Chris Middleton ready to spot up the shoe? What do you do? Trap Dame. Giannis is coming at you downhill. He's going to dunk on your head. Leave Dame, switch with a big man. He's going to cook his ass. Cook him. Bury him. Ouch. So that's going to be amazing to watch. That's going to be must-see TV. Can I get 82 games of Celtics-Bucks? Now, their perimeter defense is going to struggle, right? But, man, offensively, they're going to score some points. So, yeah, it's conference finals or bust for them. And I'm going to say this. Right? This is the same situation that KD was in with Steph. Damian Lillard can help Giannis get into the top 10 convo. He's not going to help him get into, like, Mount Rushmore talk because he ain't going to get to Rushmore. He's played too long for us to know that he ain't Rushmore material, all right? Some people talking about Giannis, you know, is top 4-9. But Dame can help him get the top 10. And unfortunately, if they win a championship, Dame is going to be in the same situation that KD was in. You can't win alone, so you join Steph, KD. And if the Bucks win a chip, the praise and the glory is going to go to Giannis. And I don't know if Dame really cares like that, but I know I would, okay? No, but seriously, Dame and his game, if they gel as I expect them to, they're going to win, and they have the potential to win championships with an S, multiple. And that would get Giannis in some top 10 conversations because he's going to get all the praise for those chips. They're going to say, well, he won without Dame, you know, same way they're doing with Steph and KD. Well, he won without KD, even though KD was clearly the best player on those two middle championships. But it is what it is. That's how it is. That's how it works out. I don't think Philly's a contender in the East. I think they're window closed, man. I'm sorry. They had the opportunity. But now, Giannis has someone like Dame to take the load off. In the crunch time, he don't have to be the one shooting all the free throws and handling all the time. Oh, my God. Middleton, man. Like Giannis ain't got to play hot potato no more, man. He can just relax and let Dame take over at the end of games. Dame's going to handle, like, really, Dame and Middleton's going to do all the ball handling at the end of games. So, yeah, for 46 minutes, Giannis is going to be dunking on your head. Bang, 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 bang. In the last 2 minutes, Dame is going to handle and close y'all out. Dame time. That's going to be nasty to watch. So, yeah, Philly's window's closed. The Heat, they're always going to be tough, but they don't have enough firepower. If the Heat are able to make it to the conference finals, that just means the Bucks or the Celtics just fail. All right? I know Giannis don't like that word, but yeah, it's a failure if you don't get to the conference finals, Giannis. I'm just telling you right now. But the Heat are going to be tough, but I don't think they have enough firepower. Cleveland and New York, good teams. People talking about they want to see what New York ain't going to do jack, man. New York ain't doing nothing. Same old team from last year. RJ Barrett still limited. Yeah, they're going to be good records, but they're not going to contend. People talking about Cleveland, they're young, they're up and coming. I don't see it. We'll see. So in the West, Denver, hey, man, as a champ, you got to beat the champs. All right, to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. And Denver is still nice. They still got the unstoppable force in the Joker. There's nobody still who can stop the Joker. But I don't like their losses during the offseason. Like, that Bruce Brown loss, I'm telling you, letting Bruce Brown go is going to be tough. I don't know if a lot of people are talking about that, but he's one of those hustle guys. He makes the shots, open shots, like he gets, you know, extra possessions. They're going to miss Bruce Brown. Mark my words on that one. I don't know who they got to replace him, if anybody will, but they're going to miss Bruce Brown for sure. But they're still the champ, so you got to beat them, all right? They're still good, but they're not unbeatable. The Suns, now them boys got some firepower. The Suns are going to breeze through the regular season. They're going to score a ton of points. Like KD, Booker, and Bradley. Bradley Beal's a third option. You're going to have your third best perimeter defender. If that guy's even plays defense trying to guard Bradley Beal, he's going to cook his ass. He's going to be cooking. So they're going to score points easily. So they're going to coast through the regular season, high scoring team, high firepower all day, every day. Now in the playoffs, when the game slows down and you need somebody to orchestrate an offense, I don't know who that's going to be. That's where they might struggle. And their defense, they got Vogel. Vogel's going to help them defensively. But I don't know who on that team is a lockdown defender like that. KD defense is good. Booker's defense has improved, but those guys ain't locking you down. And maybe they don't need to. Maybe they score so much they don't have to lock you down. But the Suns, absolutely, that's conference finals bout. If, again, they're one of those teams, if they don't make the conference finals, that's a failure. Memphis, I'm hoping they grew up. I've talked about them before. Immature. Ja suspended for 25 games. They got my guy D. Rose there. They got Marcus Smart. They should make a run. They should contend. They got the talent. JJJ, if he matures, he struggled in FIBA, couldn't grab a damn rebound. So hopefully he learns how to grab a rebound during the NBA regular season. But they still have talent to compete, for sure. I wouldn't be surprised when Ja gets back, because you still can't stand in front of this guy when he decides to go to the paint. So, again, maturity is going to be big for them. And I think Marcus Smart and Derrick Rose will help in that, bringing that maturity to that team. Clippers. And you got to say this about the Clips. They're deep and all that. They got Zubac to bang with the Joker, right? They got Mason Plumlee. They could bang with the big boys. But health, man. Can they stay healthy? You know, Russ is going to be there. He's going to go 100 miles per hour. Can PG stay healthy? Right? Can the Claw Kawhi stay healthy? That's really what it is with them. Like, if they can stay healthy, they could beat anybody. Anybody, anytime. Clippers stay healthy, they could be champs. Likelihood, recent history says they probably won't. But if they are, they're contenders for sure. They're deep, top to bottom. And I don't want to disrespect Golden State, so I'm gonna leave him in there as a contender. I will never count out Steph again for the rest of my life. I don't care. This guy could be in a wheelchair. That robotic arm of his, I will not doubt Steph Curry's robotic arm anymore. For those who want to know what I'm talking about, a few episodes ago, I talked about the fact that there's this thing on TikTok talking about Steph has a robotic right arm. That Kevin Hart said Steph showed him his robotic right arm. The dumbest things you'll ever hear, man. Conspiracy, I swear to God. No, as long as Steph is alive, he's scary. So he's a threat. So Golden State remains a threat. They got CP. I don't know what to expect. I'm not sure how he's going to gel. You know, if he's going to start and Draymond's going to start, I don't know how that works. They still lack size. I want to see how Kuminga comes along, if he gets more PT, right? If he grows up, how his game develops. But it's still all Steph's right arm, man. So they'll contend. We'll see if they're ready to play. Andrew Wiggins, of course, if he can get back to form from 2 years ago. They still got a squad. So I'm not going to doubt them at all. So that's my contenders for the West. Denver, the Suns. By the way, the Suns got Nurkic, right, when Dame got shipped out, which is good. So he's someone who can bang, right? Someone who can bang with the Joker. Because DeAndre Ayton was punked. Nurkic will not be punked. He may foul out. He may turn the ball over. He may not make the shots you need him to. Make the right decisions, but he ain't going to be punked. You ain't going to punk the Nurkic. So, yeah, so Denver, Suns, Memphis, Clippers, and Golden State are my challengers in the West. The Celtics and the Bucks are really my only challengers in the East, like my only contenders, title contenders in the East. Everybody else is faking, fugazi. All right, a couple more topics before I let y'all go. I didn't get to touch on while I was on vacation over the summer, and then football came and took my time. There was this conversation going around, a couple conversations I want to touch on. One of them is around basketball players, right, and really pure scorers, right? The pure hooper, you hear it all the time, pure hooper and pure scorer. And it seems like a lot of people don't know what a pure scorer is. So when you say, you know, Carmelo Anthony was a better pure scorer than LeBron James, people are like, well, how is that when LeBron James has, you know, all-time leading scorer in NBA history? But it's two different things. Pure scorer and great scorer are two different things. So let me help you out a little bit, all right? My faithful listeners, I want you guys to be educated basketball heads like myself. So let me help y'all understand a pure scorer, what, right? Let me help y'all understand what a pure scorer is versus a great scorer or someone who scores a lot of points. First of all, a pure scorer is something that you can't really quantify. And really, I think that's what a lot of people, I think, have problems with it, have issues with the term, because you can't really quantify. You can't really say, oh, because you score 28 points per game, you're a pure scorer. No, that's not how it works. That really isn't. You could be a pure scorer and only average, you know, 15, 16 points a game. Pure scorer does, you know, being a great scorer does not equal being a pure scorer. Two different things. It's not ring count, right? It's not things that are quantifiable. Pure score is not quantifiable. It's not ring count. It's not points per game. It's not any of the analytics stats. It ain't none of that. It's really, you know, I feel like the pure score is something that people just, you know, playground talk, you know, over the years, you know, people develop the coin, the term, like, you know, this guy's a pure scorer. And really all they're talking about is this guy can score from anywhere. There is no bad spot for him on the court. Like, he's comfortable from anywhere. And no matter who is guarding him, he's comfortable. You're close, you get up in his shirt, he has the moves, the whatever it is going to take, the handles, the head fakes to get around you to get his shot off. You sag off, you give him the J, he'll take it and make it. So there's nothing you can do. The pure scorer, right? The pure scorer, there's nothing you can do to really stop them from getting a good shot off, a shot they're comfortable with. That doesn't mean they'll make it all the time. They could miss it. But that's just that. They missed it. There's no, you know, a pure scorer is not, you know, oh, I'll give you the J. No, you give a pure scorer the J, he's gonna make it. Oh, I'm gonna crowd you. I'm gonna go around you. I'm gonna shake you. I'm gonna get this bucket. Right? The dudes they call buckets, they're pure scorers. They got the skill to and the will. They got the skill and the will to score. They got the full arsenal, the full clip, as they say. The jump shot, the handle, the footwork, the body movement, the head fakes. They got it all. Complete package. That doesn't mean you can't score a lot of points without those. And a lot of guys in the NBA have scored a lot of points without all that. But the guys that we call pure scorers are those with just a litany of moves, of capabilities to get their shot off, a good shot off. Well, you'll say, well, how does this apply to, you know, the NBA? Well, finals last year, I think, amongst other things, besides not being able to stop the Joker, the Heat were lacking a pure scorer. The Nuggets had a pure scorer. Jamal Murray's a pure scorer. He can give you the business no matter what. he can give anybody the business. The Heat didn't have that. So once the Nuggets clamped down, the Heat didn't have anybody who could, hey, man, let me give you the ball for 3 minutes. Just go get buckets. No structure, right? That's a pure scorer. They don't need a pick. I'm not hunting, you know, this guy, the weakest link. I don't need it because the good teams aren't going to let you hunt the weakest link. So the pure scorer is going to say, fine, I don't need to hunt the weakest link. I don't need a switch. I don't need a pick. I'm going to go at you, the best defender. I'm going to give you buckets. So somebody like Prime Carmelo Anthony is a pure scorer. Like, if you add Prime Carmelo Anthony to the Miami Heat last year, they're probably winning that series because when Denver turns up their defense and says, okay, Jimmy, we're not going to let you cook, Jimmy's not a pure scorer. He can score. He's not a pure scorer. But somebody like Prime Carmelo Anthony, okay, I'm going to cook you. Whoever it is, send your best. This guy's going to get buckets all day, every day. Like Aaron Gordon, Bruce Brown, you guys are getting buckets all day, every day. That's a pure scorer. A pure scorer is game 7 of the finals 2016. Everybody's legs are done. Nobody's shots has fallen. But let's give Kyrie the ball. He takes a three, what seems to be a bad shot, to a pure scorer, not really. Bang! In your grill. Everybody's legs is done. If you looked at the previous however many minutes before and after that, it was tough for people to get shots. Picks wasn't working. People tired as hell. But pure scorers just find a way. If you think of the USA team over the summer, they lack scores. They lack pure scores, really, amongst other things. They lack height, right? They lack a lot of things, right? Good basketball players. But one of the things they did lack as well, Anthony Edwards was the only true scorer, like the pure scorer. I don't need a pick. Clear out, 1-4 flat. Doesn't matter what the defense does. I'm going to take this guy and I'm going to get a bucket. I'm going to get a good shot off. So you don't have to be a pure scorer to be a great scorer. Matter of fact, being a pure scorer can sometimes be a detriment, right? Some guys are pure scorers and they call pure hoopers, right? And buckets. They could be a detriment to your team because sometimes they're so good at scoring, they don't make the extra pass, right? They don't do the smaller things, the little things needed to win. That's true. But oftentimes you need guys who are just pure scorers, unstoppable scorers to win chips. They are critical to winning. Just like there are different pieces that are needed to win a championship, the glue guys, the hustle guys, a pure scorer goes a long way to winning because in the NBA and you know the finals and the playoffs, when defenses get tight and nobody's open, nobody can get open, screens ain't working, other team knows your play, a pure scorer can get a bucket. He'll find a way. And that's what made KD so unstoppable and so unfair with the Warriors. Because you already had Steph, man. And then you threw in KD. That's what made the joint so unfair. Another guy who was unstoppable. Get his shot whenever, wherever. Nothing you could do with him. So LeBron, and the argument over the summer was, you know, well, LeBron has scored the most points. How come he's not a pure scorer? Because he's not, and that's okay. He's still great. He's still a great scorer. Clearly, he scored the most points in league history. But he's not what we would call on a playground a pure scorer. And the best way I can explain this, right, to people who really can't get it, is if you think about it, if the NBA, if there was like a big ass, just a big 21 game, if you grew up playing 21. I don't know if kids play 21 anymore. Just a big 21 game. Everybody, you know, who's ever played in the NBA ever are part of this game. You got Kareem. You got Shaq, Jordan, Kobe. Like, everybody ever is in this 21 game. Now, for those who grew up playing 21, you know usually if everyone's about the same size, the paint is packed. You're not just going to back in and dunk the ball. You're not going to just have free access to the lane. So you need someone who can navigate a multitude of defenders to score, to win those games. You got to be able to shoot tough shots, right? You got to be able to, you know, drive by one guy before the next guy gets there to pull up. So there's this big old 21 game. Everybody's there. Shaq, Kareem, everybody, right? Bron, KD, everybody's there. Who would you say in that scenario would be able to come out as a winner? I know it's crazy, but stick with me. All right, who in that scenario where everybody's there, the paint is packed, right? Who do you think would come out as a winner? That's why I think the true score, the pure scores would come into play. Because Kareem has scored a lot of points up until LeBron passed him. He was a leader in points scored in the NBA. But you're not going to skyhook your way to 21, all right? That takes Kareem out. Because you got to go get the ball. The ball's going to roll. Somebody's going to miss. The ball's in the corner. You got to go get it in the corner, top of the key. Kareem ain't shooting skyhooks from the top of the key. So that takes Kareem out. He's not a pure scorer. Shaq was a dominant scorer. But Shaq can't back his way all the way to the paint from the top of the key with everyone there. The mass of humanity. So that takes Shaq out. So y'all get the drift? So that leaves guys who can navigate the multitude of people whose jump shot, they catch the ball, they can shoot. You press up on them, they can give you a fake, head and shoulder fake, jab step. Like, they can work, like the footwork, like whatever it takes, these guys are going to get a shot off. Bron, as great as he is as a scorer, I don't think he has that ability to navigate that kind of game, that kind of space. You can't bulldoze, which is what Bron does a lot. You can't bulldoze with your shoulder for 21 points in that situation. You're not going to bulldoze Shaq for 21 points and Hakeem and Dikembe's elbows. You ain't doing that. So somebody's going to say, well, I'm going to just give Bron a jump shot all day. And we know Bron's jump shot is not as reliable as, say, somebody like Kobe. So you're guarding Kobe, you're going to say, I can't let you shoot, but Kobe has a footwork to handle to navigate that, all those people. He gets by one guy, he pulls up on him before the next guy gets there. He's a tough shot maker. Jordan's a tough shot maker. I hope y'all get my drift. Karl Malone was another great scorer, but Karl Malone needed pick and rolls with John Stockton and post-ups. You're not going to post up your way just like that, right? Ain't nobody passing you the ball. So you got to be, as a pure scorer, you got to be able to get the ball at the top of the key and create your own shot with one guy in your face already and dudes ready to come at you as soon as you go by the first guy. I know it's crazy and wild, but that was the only way I could think of explaining what a pure scorer is. And really that came to my mind because I was teaching my kids how to play 21, and I realized that because they don't have PE like that, they've never played 21. I talked about that in a previous episode about kids not having PE. Anyway, back on topic. So LeBron's a great scorer, great NBA scorer, still GOAT tier. Right? People think, well, just because, you know, he's not a pure scorer, you're saying he sucks. No, he's still great. He's still the best of his generation, not even close. Best player in his generation. But I just don't think he's a pure scorer. And that's why when we saw these lists over the summer, when you see these lists and guys were talking about, you know, who's a pure scorer, who's a bucket, who's a pure hooper, they leave LeBron off. Not because LeBron's not great. It's just he doesn't fit that mold. All right? Hope that made sense. So the top five pure scorers all time, before I get off of that. Top five pure scorers all time, in my mind, I think are Jordan, Kobe, KD, Carmelo, and T-Mac, at least who I've seen, okay? So top five scorers, pure scorers who I've seen are Jordan, Kobe, KD, Melo, and Tracy McGrady. I think all those guys, in that hypothetical 21 game I'm talking about, those guys would be the most successful that I've seen. Now that there's smaller guys like Iverson, you know, Steph and these guys who could be successful as well, but they're so small that they wouldn't be able to get a rebound. So if there's a 6 feet and under game, yeah, Steph, Iverson, these guys are scorers. They could get it done. But in a game where you got Dikembe's elbows, Karl Malone's muscles, Shaq's big ass there, like all these guys there, the lane's not open. You can't drive straight line to the paint. It ain't there, right? Which is a different scenario than one-on-one, because one-on-one, you can always put your shoulder into somebody and drive to the paint all day. So Shaq would have the advantage, right? You can't guard Shaq one-on-one. LeBron would have the advantage, right? So one-on-one is really not the sign of a pure scorer. A pure scorer is really just no matter what happens, no matter what defense you play, no matter where you put me on the court, I can get a bucket. I can get a good shot. And the top five I've seen in my lifetime, Jordan, Kobe, KD, Melo, and T-Mac. But those are the pure scorers. Let's talk about the best players in the NBA right now. So who are the 10 best players in the NBA right now? I'm going to leave y'all with this, all right? Best basketball players, okay? Let's leave pure scorers alone. The best basketball players right now. And ESPN made their list and people was mad, you know, that ESPN made this list and people's rankings and this and that. So here are my 10 best players in the NBA right now. And when I say best players, not just put great at putting up numbers, because some guys put up numbers, but they don't really contribute to winning. This is numbers, personal numbers, and contribute to winning. They got to have a certain level of success. The way I see it is these are guys, you know, no matter what situation you put them in, no matter what you put around them, they would put up their numbers and their teams would have some certain level of success. They may not make the playoffs or they may not win the championship, but no matter where you put them, their team's going to have some level of success. You're not going to be like, oh, I got to tank. You know, we're tanking. You know, we're unwatchable. No matter who their coach is, no matter what their system is, these guys, you know, they're going to compete. So I think the best player in the NBA right now is the Joker, okay? Jokic is the best player in the NBA. He can score. He can create. Smart. Like, people underestimate how important it is to be smart in basketball. He's smart. Like, he just knows how to play basketball. And his defense has turned up recently to where you just can't take advantage of him all day and run through him like, you know, some train tracks, like, you know, people used to a couple years ago. So Joker, to me, is the number one player in basketball in the NBA. The second best player in basketball is Giannis. His scoring and his effort is what puts him up there. I think his effort alone, like, wins games for the Bucks, even when, you know, he's not scoring a ton, which is rarely, when he's not having an efficient night, his effort wins a lot of games. So Giannis, to me, is number two. He can score, dominate the paint nowadays. He bodies dudes, and his effort. Number three, Joel Embiid. I know in the playoffs he's been quite a bit of a no-show, but he's still dominant. Hit you with a jumper inside. He's unstoppable. So if you have Embiid on your team, you're probably going to win a lot of games regardless. Number four, I have to go with Steph, man. It's starting to get controversial, but I have to go with Steph. Like, Steph, people say, well, he needs picks and he needs to run around picks. But, I'm trying not to be biased here. This is an unbiased take. Steph draws a lot of attention. And you can say, well, if there are scrubs on his team, it doesn't matter if he draws attention. That's true. But he's going to get a lot of open shots for a lot of people. And with Steph, and when he gets hot, you're going to compete. All right? You're going to compete with Steph no matter who's around him. KD, the ultimate weapon. 7 feet tall, handles, shot. Whatever you need, KD got you. At number six, I got Bron. Bron has fallen off. Not because of his own doing. Because he's aging. Father time catches up to everybody. Okay? I'm sorry. He's gotten older, but it's crazy that in year 21, he's still one of the best, one of the top 10 best guys. Like, I was thinking through this. I was like, there's not 10 guys better than LeBron who's put up numbers and impact winning. Impact winning at 21 like Bron does. So Bron's number six, he's too smart still. Yeah, his physical gifts have slowed down, but his mind is still sharp. And he's still great. Sad as it is to say. This is where it gets real controversial. This is where it gets real controversial. Jimmy Butler, to me, is top 10 best player in the league. Jimmy Butler is top 10 best player in the league, y'all. People don't want to admit it. Aesthetically pleasing, that's not his game. He doesn't have the great handles. He's not, you know, a flamethrower with his shooting until the playoffs, of course. But he does everything you know on the court to win. And his heart and his effort gets a lot of wins that other guys just don't get. So, yeah, to me, Jimmy Butler right now is a better player than the person after him on the list, Jason Tatum, who I got at number eight. Jason can score. He's developing into a great two-way player, no doubt about it. But he needs to lock in more. Jimmy Butler is locked in. So at number seven, controversial as it is, I think Jimmy Butler is the seventh best player in the NBA. He can score. He defends. He's smart. He can create. People can hate on it. If you're not going to be biased and you're going to talk about playing basketball, great basketball players, the 10 best basketball players, not scorers, not hoopers, the 10 best basketball players in the NBA, Jimmy Butler is right up there with anybody because he gets his points, he gets his buckets, and he impacts winning. So Jimmy's number seven, Tatum is eight. Again, Tatum can score. He does whatever he wants on the offensive end, really, when he's locked in. Becoming a hell of a two-way player. He needs to get his counterpart. I ain't going to go there. He needs to get his counterpart to participate, to lock into. Jaylen Brown, I'm talking about you. Damian Lillard is still top 10 to me. He's a number two now, but he's still top 10 to me. Okay? He can score. He can facilitate. The man is just a handful. His scoring is so great. It's that even with his lack of defense, it's like, damn, what do you do with Dame? So he's still up there for sure. Same reason why I got Luka at number 10. Because Luka can score. He's a playmaker. Like, he can do it all. Luka can do it all on offense. Yes, he gets ISO heavy, that James Harden ball. But with Luka on your team, you're going to win some games, man. Because he's so dominant. He's crafty. His defense may not be where we want it to be. But again, he's one of those guys offensively. He's so dominant. He goes so crazy, draws so much attention that you're going to win some games with Luka. And he affects winning. So those are my guys, man, that I think are the 10 best basketball players. I talked about pure scorers. 10 best basketball players in the NBA right now. Joker, Giannis at 2, Embiid at 3, Steph at 4, KD at 5, Bron at 6, Jimmy Butler is controversial at 7, I don't care. Jason Tatum at 8, Damian Lillard at 9, Luka Doncic at 10. I think that's a good list. These guys, if you have them on your team, you're going to win some games. You're going to put up numbers. They're not scheme dependent. They're going to put up their numbers, and they're going to help your team win. You're going to have some level of success with these boys. So those are my top 10 NBA players, and that was the end of the pure scorer basketball player conversation. All right, let's keep going. A couple more things. Long, I'm going to go long today, y'all, because this is the one time I'm going to talk about basketball probably for a while, at least extensively, because it's still football season. Y'all know football season kind of dominates the headlines, all right? So y'all hang in there with me. The NBA needs a Scottie Pippen Award. I've talked about that. The NBA needs to put in a Scottie Pippen Award for the number two because everybody is chasing number one. Everybody's trying to be the best. And as a result, I've said it before, it leaves teams not optimizing, not running at their most efficient, at their best, because everyone's trying to be the Jordan of their team. When really, if there was a best male co-star award, like they do in the movies and TV shows, a Scottie Pippen award, that would go a long way to help NBA teams, man. Think about it. You have the MVP, the best player, and you have the guy who was the best co-star, who helped the team run smoothly, right? Because without the number two, the number one's not winning. Without Jamal Murray, Jokic is not winning, right? Michael Jordan is great. He's not winning without Scottie. As much as people try to erase him from history, then he's not. So this award would motivate dudes and motivate teams, right, to instead of shooting to be in the limelight, motivate dudes to do what's best to help the team win. You will still get yours. You still get your buckets and your dollars. But you would help the team become more efficient and optimize their performance. So right now, the best number twos in the NBA who are in position to be number two, because I've said it before, there's only really like four or five guys at most in the NBA who are like true number ones you can win a chip with, who have proven you can win a chip with, or we believe can win a chip as a number one. The rest of these guys are number twos masquerading as number ones. But the best number two, right? Jamal Murray still holds a crown, but Booker will be a great number two. He'll be a great number two this year. He'll show that. Dame is going to be a great number two this year after trying to cosplay as a number one for a long time. He'll be a great number two. Anthony Davis, who really should have been a number one on the Lakers, just doesn't have the personality for a number one, so he's going to be a number two. Zach LaVine is a number two on my Bulls. Jaylen Brown is a number two for the Celtics. So the NBA needs a best number two award to reward the best co-star. The Scottie Pippen Award for the best co-star in the NBA. The NBA needs that. It'll help dudes still get their shine on, still get the awards, still get the dollars. You can have dollars, right, tied to this and their salary to say, hey, you'll get a salary bump if you get this, right? Instead of just saying if you get the MVP like the Rose Award, you can say, hey, if you get the Scottie Pippen Award, you'll get these dollars too in your next contract. Ha ha. Think about that, NBA. I think that'd be a great move, the Scottie Pippen Award. All right, last couple of things, y'all, and I'm going to get off of this. Again, while I was out on vacation, a couple of things were said that I wanted to jump in on. Dwayne Wade is becoming underrated post-retirement, and people are disrespecting this guy. People are also disrespecting Paul Pierce because Paul Pierce is talking crazy, saying he was better than D. Wade. And let me say this. Paul Pierce was a baller. I'm not going to be the one to disrespect Paul Pierce because I've seen the brother firsthand dissect prime LeBron James at his peak. I saw Paul Pierce tear him apart, gave him bucket after bucket. So Paul Pierce has game, and he's become underrated and undervalued because people say, well, he didn't win until, you know, KG and Ray got there. Well, that's because he played on some pretty bad Boston Celtics team. Not many people can carry bad teams. Bron did that, and that was really about it, like, to success. So Paul Pierce was a baller, man. Yeah, people saw his old man game as he got older, but he was athletic when he was younger. Had handles, could get to the hoop, could shoot. And Paul Pierce is on my all-time bad shot maker list. Like, when he got hot, he was making any and everything. And the shot would look flicked, but it would go in. So no disrespect to Paul. He was an absolute baller. But I'm going to say this. Paul was not as good as D-Wade. D-Wade was a level above. Not too far above, but D-Wade was a level above Paul Pierce. But Paul Pierce was the truth. He got the truth nickname for a reason. It was the truth. But the disrespect, right, came. I was like, man, I got to talk about this, and I couldn't because, I wasn't available. Jeff Teague has a pretty good podcast, but he disrespected my man D-Wade, man. I'm not even a Heat fan like that. But he disrespected D-Wade. He said Harden was better than D-Wade. What? James Harden, great. Baller. Stud. Hall of Famer. James Harden was not better than Dwayne Wade. Okay? Now, if all you like is offense and shooting, then yeah, you would take James Harden. If all you like is dribbles and step backs, yeah. And I know, you know, James Harden won a lot of games. But to me, I don't think James Harden is on the same level as D-Wade at all. Like, D-Wade was just that guy, man. Like, when times were hard, and that to me is why I would take D-Wade. Because not only was he a two-way player, like, if you're going to, you know, pick somebody. If I'm going to pick somebody, I'm always going to pick the guy who plays both sides of the ball. Right? Because to me, both sides matter. Defense matters. So at the gym, right, there's guys, they'll score 6 points, they'll score 8 points, but give up 9, 10 to the guy who they're guarding. Or they'll provide no help defense to the rest of the team. And when you lose, they'll blame the rest of the team because they scored 8 points. Ooh, I scored 8 points. Y'all didn't do nothing. Well, you couldn't keep your man in front of you, bro. Or you didn't help out on D at all. And that's where James Harden is. James Harden could score. He could put up points on points on points. But he was one-dimensional. D-Wade plays both sides of the ball. And not only that, another reason why I picked D-Wade over James Harden is because when times got hard, you could count on D-Wade to come through, man. When times get hard, James Harden, in the biggest of moments, have shrunk. In the playoffs this year, with Joel Embiid, he didn't step up when they needed him. I know he played well a couple of games, but in the biggest games, he shrunk. And throughout his career in the biggest games, James Harden has shrunk. He has not answered the bell. Whereas D-Wade, in the biggest games, in the biggest moments, the boy has stepped up. against Dallas, they're down 0-2. Yeah, you're going to say, well, you know, he got a ton of free throws. He got help from the refs and Shaq. What? You're down 0-2. Most guys are like, they're about to mail it in. For that young dude to step up like that and come through and carry that team like he did, that takes some guts. And over in his career, in the biggest of games in 2011 playoffs, when Bron wasn't playing like Bron, D-Wade was in the finals against Dallas. D-Wade was hooping. You know? I can't think of a big moment where I'm like, oh, man, D-Wade didn't show up. And for those reasons, I'm taking D-Wade over James Harden. Again, James is great. Offensively, he's amazing, unstoppable. Could score with anybody. But if I'm picking a team, D-Wade gets my vote over James Harden, man. Like, I'm always going to pick the guy who can defend and score, play both ways. I'm always going to pick that guy. And he shows up in clutch moments. I'm always going to pick that guy. Yeah, he's not dribbling and nasty. D-Wade didn't need all those handles, man. His first step was so quick, he was gone. And then he had that pullback, that nasty step back that had dudes hitting the floor. That dude was an animal, man. Stop disrespecting D-Wade. Jeff Teague? Nah, Jeff Teague really got a great podcast, though, for real. And Jeff Teague himself was a baller. But I can't let the D-Wade disrespect fly like that, bro. Like, when things went bad, D-Wade stepped up. And you can't say that about James Harden. When things go bad with James Harden, around James Harden, he's not lifting dudes up. He's going down with the ship. Against the Spurs, when they need a big game, you know, or Kawhi is out, people are injured. Like, now is the time for you to come through and win the series for us, James. He doesn't come through. With Embiid on your team, you got to play better than that in a game 7. That got to come through, but both of them slumped their shoulders. He's not a lifter, right? When things are going down, D-Wade was a lifter, man. He picked things up. Somehow, down 0-2 as a young guy against the Dallas Mavericks, that first playoff run, that first championship, as a young guy, down 0-2, James Harden ain't bringing that team back, bro. But D-Wade did. So you can talk about offensively this and that. There's hoopers, there's pure scorers, and there's basketball players. D-Wade was a basketball player. Defensively, blocking shots, stealing, D-ing guys up. Offensively, get to the paint. Even in a crowded paint era, yeah. Give me D-Wade, bro. Give me Dwayne Wade. All right, y'all. I'm done. This was a long episode, but I had to get a lot out. I had to get a lot out. I appreciate y'all watching, listening, as always. But I'm going to catch you guys next time. Mike, sports and the real shit. Be good. Peace. I'm going straight to the top. Just put the sack on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top.